Hi, and welcome to episode 13 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher of Tyr. And as always, to my digital left is David. Say hi, David.
Hello. I am excited for what we're doing today.
Yay, that's awesome. I am too, and you know, we're going to call episode 13 lucky number 13 as opposed to the usual assumption that 13 is unlucky. And today we have two very awesome guests, and I'm super, super excited because we have Matt Kahn and Tony Rooka, both of GamerX. So if you want to say hi to everyone.
Hey, how y'all doing? We're super excited to be here today.
Yay! I'm really happy to be here.
Yay! I wish I could see you, Tony, because I'm pretty sure you're doing like a Kermity flail.
You can pretty much assume that I'm practically a cartoon character at all times.
Yay! So we'll get all of our kind of intro-y type things out of the way before we get into the meat of our questions for Matt and Tony. So as you know, we are part of the Geeked FM network, along with Geeks with Sneaks, Chromatic Life FM, and More Than Bits podcasts. You can find our shows both on freshoutoftokens.simplecast.fm or over at geek.fm. And we have teas, other items like coffee mugs, which the most awesome Sharif Jackson bought a mug and tweeted at us, over at the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop under Fresh Out of Tokens Designs. And we're splitting the profits 50-50 with Chachi Bobings, who designed our logo and banner. In case you missed it last time, we now have a blog to complement the show. Follow us at outoftokenscast.wordpress.com, so if you have questions, complaints, hate mail, love us, or just want to discuss an episode that has been posted in further detail, please hit us up over there. So with no further ado, we will get into our usual fun questions. And, you know, this is just a default, so if you're ever on the show, just note that this will always be the first question we ask you if you are a gaming-type person. So for both Matt and Tony, whoever wants to go first, what got you into gaming?
Sure. So as Tony seems to have disappeared into the Skype void, I'll go first. Obviously, I think that for a lot of us, especially those of us who are probably, like, you know, 30 and younger, I think a lot of us, like, I grew up with games. I don't remember a time when I wasn't playing video games. My parents had an old Intellivision, so I would sometimes sneak into their room and play that. My sister had an NES, so I would sneak into her room and play that. But I would say that the first system I owned was a Super Nintendo when I got, for a Christmas gift, I think I was 5 or 6. And that Super Nintendo gave me a lot of years of fun between Super Mario World and Earthbound and Super Mario RPG and some more weird stuff like Hyper Zone. I probably played, you know, my SNES didn't have time to turn yellow. It turned other colors with my fingerprints all over it. So
it's great to hear someone else really started with the SNES.
Yes, SNES was great. I mean, it was really no disrespect to the older systems, but I feel like the Super Nintendo was really when it really combined, I think, a lot of the knowledge of what didn't work over the last 20 years into a package that it was before things kind of got too AAA and a little too overproduced, and I think it was just the right mix of being, like, creative, but also I think they had kind of worked away some of the more rough points that made a lot of the NES and Atari games really frustrating.
Oh man, I absolutely agree with that, Matt. That pretty much sums up exactly how I feel about the SNES. I was definitely too poor to ever own a Nintendo, or my family was, anyways, when I was a kid. And the SNES, I think, was like a present from a cousin or something like that. And I think I got it like a good like 10 minutes before the N64 was out. But somewhere within those 10 minutes. I managed to get my hands on, I think I got them mainly from, like, friends who were done with the games and stuff. I managed to get my hands on Final Fantasy VI, or III was on the box, Chrono Trigger, Legend of Zelda, and the worst one, I would say, was Mario RPG. Worse in the sense of, like, ruining me pretty much forever. from being able to do anything but sit around and play JRPGs for the next several years.
Yeah, the Super Mario RPG was interesting because it was the first like mainstream parody of what of JRPGs that I know of, at least.
It was just so perfect. There was just something like just utterly perfect about Super Mario RPG. Just like the music was always amazing, and like the visuals were great. The gameplay was like super powerful. Like, and the story never took itself seriously, you know, which was really great to see in a JRPG, which usually took itself way too seriously. I'm gonna be probably chased down for saying this, but I was actually not a big fan of Final Fantasy VII, partially because it took itself so seriously, and I couldn't really take the characters very seriously because they felt very shallow, and it may have just been translation or something, but Mario RPG being so goofy and hilarious kind of was a good remedy for that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that Super Mario RPG is the perfect RPG. You know, I think that, like, you know, as a kid, I was just, like, really impressed with it. And then I almost, you know, I was, I think, a pretty introspective child. And so I remember just being like, you know, maybe it's just because I'm young and I don't understand other games. And as, you know, other RPGs came out, and as, like, Paper Mario and, you know, what Mario and Luigi, whatever, and they all tried to replicate that style, it became very apparent that Super Mario RPG was actually amazing. Like, I mean, Super Mario RPG was perfect. It was, you know, I feel like it was that perfect mix of Nintendo quality and humor and fun mixed with that really solid, amazing battle system that Square had been perfecting over six different, you know, Final Fantasy games and experience. And it all came together in this really beautiful, like, marriage that Nintendo hasn't really been able to emulate since. And, you know, even to Tony's point, I mean, the Final Fantasy series is definitely a very serious series. I like my games a little more silly. You know, like, I'm a big fan of Earthbound, Disgaea, Mario RPG. But Mario RPG, I think, you know, that battle with Smithy, the battle against Culex, they were all really, really intense, hard battles. You had to, not necessarily grind, but you had to, you know, really practice and get good before you could fight Culex. And, that mix of things was just beautiful. And, you know, here's hoping that one day Square Enix and Nintendo, they make up and they kiss, and hopefully they'll do something again in the future.
So I assume that you brought us on to gush about Mario RPG for an hour, right? If that's
sure, that can be the additional content we only give to Patreons later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just gonna be the director's cut with just like an hour and a half of me and Matt talking about particular moments in Mario RPG.
That would be awesome.
We do keep mentioning cutting a shorter version for like public so that the Patreon people have more of an incentive, but we haven't done it yet.
Well, here's now your chance. We can talk about Mario RPG
or maybe
for
you
an
could
extended
just,
cut.
You could just make the Patreon only version be the one where you cut the puns out of the podcast. Just remove all the puns.
Oh my god, that would be amazing.
But the thing is so just one more thing on Mario RPG. The great thing about Mario RPG is that I almost just feel like there's just no down period, where in Final Fantasy VII, you know, I disagree with some of Tony's points, but I feel like the first disc of Final Fantasy VII was perfect, and as a one-disc experience, the first disc of Final Fantasy VII is perfect, but after that it kind of goes downhill for me. Earthbound had some slow moments. Disgaea has some grindy moments. But I always feel like with Super Mario RPG, you know, the battles are always really intense, whether you're going to the sky area or Booster's Castle or you know, you're fighting against, you know, Croco or any of those things. They're always intense, and it's always... It never felt like there was an area that didn't get the polish and love it needed. It all felt good and complete. And it just... I don't know. I think I go back and play it now.
Awesome.
I think we all might have to.
Yeah, probably the worst thing about it is that there's no. I mean, all those characters kind of died after that because of the relationship, you know, between Square and Nintendo. So we haven't seen Geno or Malo or any of those original characters ever again, and it's sad because I think that they had a lot of love and life that were in, you know, infused into them that, you know, we could have seen some really cool stuff if they had continued the relationship.
We haven't seen the Bowser Mario booster triad since the game.
Yeah, that was a weird scene. Speaking of weird gay kissing scenes, in Persona Q, you can get married to Teddy in a weird scene.
Huh, that's new.
And I did that, and it was very interesting playing it and also listening to the voice actor, and his voice changed a lot during that scene, and I'm wondering why that was.
Weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like he wasn't playing his Teddy voice at all, and I was like, I don't know if he was trying to gay it up or he was uncomfortable or what.
You know, so that's actually something that happens happens in dating sims. Where, so dating sims with voices, and I, you know, I apologize, I have limited Otome experience, but I did some research because I was working on one, that's still not out, that does happen sometimes with dating games where, if they have voices, sometimes, a change in the way that you use, quote-unquote, a character, be it that you suddenly, you know, go from this character being your friend to being your, like, love interest, or maybe you, like, you've turned them into, like, a completely different kind of character somehow by, like, talking to them. Sometimes that will spark a, like, a change in the voice acting or the direction of the voice acting. So suddenly the character will seem more sultry or more shy or something like that, if that makes any sense.
That makes total sense. Mm.
And I feel like if you don't have experience with that, like the Otome's, like, language of how that's used, it might be really, like, shocking.
Hmm. We'll have to ponder that. That can be, like, another Director's Cut episode.
So, Matt, you started up GamerX in 2012 via Kickstarter. Do you want to tell us how and why that came about? All right. Now, Tanya, do you want to take the next question?
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, in between my marathon Super Mario RPG sessions, you know, I was working at a startup in San Francisco, and, you know, I was, at first I was just really excited to be able to work on something where people expect, you know, like people like actually respected my opinions and wanted to, you know, work with me, and I was able to kind of implement things that I thought were really cool, and it was my first kind of real adult job. But at my job, and even though it was in the music tech world, it was definitely me being openly gay was a little bit frowned upon. And it wasn't that it was frowned upon in the office. I think everyone in the office was very like, yeah, great, gay rights, awesome. And no one had any issue with that. But because I was in the business development side, you know, people were very kind of like, well, you know how it is. And, you know, we're working with all these artists out of Nashville and this like that. And so it'd be great if you weren't publicly openly gay on your, like, on your, you know, when you're doing your stuff. And I was very, at the time, very pragmatic, and I still am, but I was just kind of like, yeah, if that's what I got to do to be successful in this business, then that's what I got to do. And, you know, at first it was fine, and I just kind of went with the punches, and as things kind of, you know, as I started working there more and more, I kind of realized it was kind of eating at my soul. And so I started, you know, organizing these meetups, these gay gamer meetups, just because I wanted to find friends in San Francisco, and I had found that in a lot of the gay groups and a lot of the kind of the queer things that were happening, it was definitely not my scene. It just seemed like the things that they were interested in was not things that I was interested in. And when I would go to these gamer things, it was very clear that, you know, me being gay kind of made me the outsider and the weirdo. And, you know, I had to kind of approach it from a very like, you know, I had to, you know, be very like, oh, you know, by the way, and it was just kind of a little weird. So I wanted to be able to know that I was in a space where I could be openly gay and queer and also talk about my nerdy interests and not have to be on edge about either one. And so I started organizing these meetups in San Francisco. They went really, really, really well in terms of like people were coming up to me being like, this is the first time I'm getting to be around, you know, other people were sharing the same feelings as me. They're like, I get to be around other people where I don't have to feel on edge, and I get to, you know, be around my own, you know, my compatriots and in this, you know, thing. And so a lot of people were talking about how good it felt. And as the numbers grew for people who were coming to the meetings, it kind of became clear that this was something that people really wanted. And people were talking about, you know, oh, like they were really jealous that we were having these big meetups in San Francisco and they wanted it, you know, for something maybe a little bit bigger. And so I was like, well, you know, shoot, why don't we just have like a big one day party and we'll just do a big little like get together. And, you know, as we started planning that out, I was like, you know, I don't have the money to do this. I, you know, it started learning that it was a lot of, it was going to be really expensive to get a venue and, you know, have insurance and all these different things. And so we're like, okay, well, we're probably going to need to do a Kickstarter and, you know, raise a little bit of money for it. And, honestly, I didn't really expect the Kickstarter to do that well. I kind of was like, okay, cool. Well, if we can raise the money, it's great. And if not, we'll figure it out. We'll do it at the park if we have to. And, you know, within, you know, a couple of days of launching the Kickstarter, it brought the masses, both in terms of negative and positive attention, very quickly. It was very surprising because I really thought it was going to be something that wasn't going to be a big deal. And I really, I guess at that time, had no idea about the vitriol in the gaming industry, as well as how many people were wanting to see a change. And so we got a lot of support from EA and Microsoft and different companies that were like, this is awesome. We want to see this exist. And we got a lot of vitriol from gamers who were like, this is the worst thing ever, and we need to destroy this. And then there's, you know, people on the outside, like the Westboro Baptist Church, who somehow found about it. And
just there for hate reasons, right?
Yeah, and they have their own, and you know, they, and I appreciate that they, you know, that we got on their radar. I feel like that's like, oh, we made it when they come after you. But it was just kind of fascinating because I really didn't think that, you know, oh, we should have a cool hangout for queer gamers. I didn't think that that would be a controversial opinion. I'm a pretty, like, at least when it comes to other social kind of oriented type of people, I consider myself actually a little bit more moderate or conservative. And so it was really surprising to me when I was like, hey, like, here's a pretty reasonable idea. Let's have queer people get together and hang out and whatever. And people were like, you're the worst scum of all time and rah. And I was just like, whoa, like, I don't think I'm saying anything that's that radical. So it was definitely eye-opening for me.
So we now have the origin story of where GamerX kind of seeded from. But Tony, how did you get involved with it?
So it's kind of a funny story. I mean,
it void again.
Oh,
well,
I'm just foolish with the microphone button.
I can actually start that though, where, you know, as I was launching GamerX, when I started working at the startup I was working at, I didn't have they weren't paying any money, and I took it as a chance to be a learning experience and a chance to get into the industry, but I didn't know where I was going to stay or how I was going to live. And Tony very graciously allowed me to live with them indefinitely while I got on my feet. And as I was living with Tony, I learned that Tony was extremely, extremely smart and extremely passionate and knew how to get things done. And as I started launching GamerX, you know, I saw that Tony wasn't doing anything super, you know, super critical right now with that in their life, and they were super smart. And I was like, if I could have anyone on my team to help me launch this, it would be Tony. And so I propositioned Tony for a while. I propositioned Tony before we launched the thing, and Tony was like, I'm busy.
I think it was like a good 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I'm very good at wearing down. I feel like eventually Tony was like, I get it, and I believe in it, and I think this could be something cool. And eventually, well, I mean, Tony, you can give it, but I was harassing Tony for a long time.
So it's funny because Matt is... I mean, if you go around in tech, you'll find a lot of very important people who respect Matt quite a bit. Because Matt is very smart. Matt is a pretty humble person, so you'll meet him and, you know, he'll just be like, "Hi, I'm Matt," the end, you know. He'll laugh and be wearing some cute animal hat or something or whatever, right? But Matt is actually a pretty brilliant person, and one of the things that I think is almost like a secret that Matt doesn't talk about is that I personally think one of his biggest skills is he always seems to know exactly who to work with, and he also far above you know, the status quo of his peers, understands the value of getting different points of views involved. And like, I've definitely seen him kind of get in that mode where they're like, no, we need this particular person. This particular person has exactly all of the viewpoints that I do not have or that we do not have. And we need this person to help us with this. And it's you know, and I've actually been really fortunate to actually see that kind of, you know, that genius like work in that way, because it's taught me actually a lot about the ways in which like kind of diversity helps even just on like a regular like business level. Because really having like different eyes on things can do a lot. Like we've definitely, like especially in running something like GamerX, we've had just from having such a like really diverse team, we've been able to find all sorts of things where, you know, if we were just like a panel of like white guys or something like that, it would have been a lot harder to do. And yeah, like Matt just bugged me for such a long time. But you know, at the end of the day, like I kind of just had to be like, okay, I'll do it. I'll do your dang video game thing. And then once I did it, I was like, oh, okay, no, you were right. This is something I actually care about, and this is actually really good. And you know, I've been devoting myself to it since, and I could not imagine doing anything else, because this is, you know, the most important work I've ever been involved in. And you know, I am constantly amazed at how much I've been able to do in this time, and how much access I have to doing more in the future. So you know, it's kind of a testament to Matt that you know, he knows who he needs to work with in general.
Which I appreciate all the very kind words, Tony, but I think that it also ties into something that we probably should talk about, which is that, you know, we've been following your work, Tanya, for quite a while, and you know, we're super humbled and blessed to the fact that you want to work with us as a diversity liaison for GamerX this year. Because, you know, one of the things that, you know, we try to focus on is, you know, we don't want to just be like, yeah, diversity is great, whatever, but we actually want to, you know, practice what we preach. And so the fact that you with I Need Diverse Games and kind of all the work that you're doing is really focusing on, you know, creating that change, I think, in a positive way, where, you know, that's something that we really look for, is people who want to create social change, but do it in a positive way, and not just say anything bad about people who complain online. But you're someone who actually is going out and making those changes and actively fighting for the things that you want. And that's what we really like, is people who are looking for ways that they can go out there and make the changes that they want to see. And we love all the work that you've been doing, and we're super honored and blessed that you want to help us out on the diversity side, because that's something that I think that we do pretty well at, but we can always do a lot better.
Thank you, Matt. I consider myself the lucky one, because this is awesome. It's a chance for me to do something good and give back to the community, as you know, as a queer gamer. And it's really interesting to me, because I've done convention stuff and programming stuff before, because this year I'm the co-chair of programming for WizCon next year in 2016. And you know, that's also part of the kind of the mission of WizCon. But as we know, sometimes sci-fi conventions don't always do well. And I'm just really excited that I get a chance to really kind of get my hands in and do the hard work. So I'm the one that feels lucky, so I thank both of you for having me on board and helping with, you know, maintaining the mission statement of being diverse.
Yeah. Well, we kind of always put our money where our money where our mouths are, and we always kind of try to set a good example. And it's funny because, you know, we were at GamerX, and we were like, if you want to see, you know, gay characters in video games, make a video game with gay characters. And then we ran out and did that, you know. Same thing happened with, like, Gaming in Color. Same thing happened with the GX Dev Game Jam, like a queer game jam. Every time we were like, you should do this, we're like, oh, we should do that. You know, this, the having a diversity liaison is definitely something we're like, companies should have that. And then we were like, we should have that.
Yeah, I think that, like, at least my you know, headspace between, like, why did I create GamerX? Why did I do even doing other things? Is like, I put it out in the world, and I'm like, hey, like, this should be a thing. And people are like, eh. Or you know, or they don't understand why it's important, or no one is doing it. And I'm like, well, if no one's going to do it, then I'll do it. Like, but at the end of the day, like, with GamerX and with Read Only Memories and Gaming in Color, it's not that, I mean, I love working on them, but it's not like I was like, I want to do this because I want to do it. it was just like, I just want to see it exist in the world. If at the end of the day there was like all these, and you know, and I don't want to take credit for, you know, what's going on with like FlameCon and all these other really cool queer gaming and nerd conventions that are going on, but I think that the success of GamerX has helped to show other people that they can do it themselves. And that's the world I want to live in. I want to live in a world where all these other conventions are existing and doing well. And that way, if GamerX ends up, you know, whatever happens in the future, I know that I now live in a world where there are events that cater to me, as opposed to 5-10 years ago where there really was nothing.
Yeah, and I've seen people think that, you know, have thoughts about us being concerned with competition, which is really funny to me, because really, if anybody ever thinks that they can do what we do better, we're always just like, excellent, go do the thing.
Well, that's so weird, because I've seen it a lot in kind of spaces where, you know, a lot of people are trying to do things, improve things, and it's like, well, you know, you can't step on someone's toes because they did it first. It's like, no, there's room for all of us, because everybody can't come out to California for a convention.
Yep.
Everybody can't, you know, even if a con's local, that doesn't mean you can afford to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we were so supportive of FlameCon when it happened.
That's awesome. I mean, there's HavenCon in Texas, because, I mean, if you're in Texas, you know, I don't live there, but I can't imagine that there's a lot of LGBT stuff going on in Texas. That's why I was, like, so excited to see it, and GamerX, and, you know, people don't seem to understand that it's not as simple as, I'm just going to go to a convention, because that's a very privileged mindset, because cons are not cheap. Even if you split a room with three people, you still have to get there. You have to eat. You have to do other things. So I wish people would realize, one, it's a position of privilege to be able to go to a convention a lot of times, and two, just because there's GamerX or HavenCon or FlameCon or other conventions doesn't mean there's not room for other people to do the same thing in their hometown.
Totally, yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, I think that's a tough thing for a lot of people to realize, is that at the end of the day, the rising tide kind of raises all ships. So, like, when people realize, oh, I can actually be my true self, I don't need to act a certain way to be accepted, and they're like, cool, I can be openly queer or whatever, or I can be, you know, how I can be whoever I want to be, and I know there's that community for me, I just think that just means that there's more people who want to go to these things. And so, and you know, just kind of to your point about, like, HavenCon or the events like that, it's really, I think, brave and awesome that you know, although I really like the work that we're doing, it is in the Bay Area where there's a little bit more acceptance of queer rights and stuff. And so when these events in Texas or in areas that maybe are a little bit more conservative are fighting for queer rights, I think that is actually super brave. And that's something that I might not even be strong enough to do, because I know that that's a really scary proposition in some areas. And so, and those are the areas that need it the most. And so, you know, good on these events that are reaching out to areas that don't have as much acceptance and trying to spread that acceptance. Because, yeah, I mean, that is I think, is just as, if not more important than the work of doing it, you know, in areas that have a little bit more acceptance.
Definitely. Now that we've kind of, like, gone around the bend a little bit, we can come back to our next question.
Yeah.
Which sort of dovetails into what we were talking about a little bit, but not so specifically.
Yeah, we wanted to ask about how has GamerX, like, grown and evolved, really, since it began.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that when I first started it, I had in my mind a certain idea of what it was going to look like, and it was probably a little bit more limited in scope. You know, I think that prior to starting GamerX, I wasn't that involved in LGBT kind of, you know, rights and advocacy. And so I didn't really understand a lot of the issues that were going on. You know, I obviously kind of knew some of the elements to it, but I didn't really understand, like, why were these groups fighting for these things, or what are issues that bi people or trans people are facing? Because as a white male, I'm only privileged to the things that I face and I understand. And so as we launched GamerX and, you know, got it out there, I kind of put out, here are the things I want to see. And a lot of people were like, well, actually, here are other things that you may not understand or realize, and these are things that are important to us. And as, you know, in those first 6 months, you know, kind of going through, like, okay, what's legitimate? Like, what are just people trolling or concern trolling or whatever? But there was a lot of really good stuff that I think that was coming in. I was like, wow, like, this is actually stuff that, you know, we maybe haven't thought about, or we don't have, you know, kind of currently in place. And I think that as the convention kind of got out to more people, we were able to kind of better understand some of the other issues, like, you know, being a queer minority or being trans or different elements in the, you know, the gaming world that you know, as a white cis gay gamer, I just don't have that kind of, you know, knowledge of. And so I think that, like, integrating those different elements of the convention, I mean, sorry, the different elements of advocacy and different, you know, things into our convention has been really important to help it grow, while still maintaining the fun and wackiness and just kind of the spontaneity of our convention. I think, you know, one of the things I really, really, really strongly believe in is that you can have that advocacy and fighting for change. It has to be fun and inviting, and it has to be something that's welcoming. I think if it comes off aggressive and radical, while there is a position for that, and I'm certainly not looking to tone police or anything, I don't find that to be very welcoming to allies. I feel like it really pushes allies away, and they're like, oh, well, that's not for me. That's not very fun. And people want honey. They don't want, you know, vinegar. And so for us, like, we're just trying to create, like, you know, we want anything that's accepting to everybody and acknowledges people's, you know, potential issues and, you know, respects that while still creating an event that's fun and weird and something that is unexpected. And if you are a straight white male and you want to come, you can still go, like, this was really fun. And I also learned a lot about these LGBT issues that I didn't have any idea. And so we try to maintain it being a fun, inviting environment while still, you know, increasing the elements of it that are focused on issues that might potentially be a little bit more tumultuous.
Yeah, that actually, all right, when I've worked with, I'm an editor, so I work with writers. One of the things I've said in the past is if you really care about something that you want to write about, you should write a comedy, because then it gets in people's heads without them having to be directly confronted with it.
Totally. That's exactly, I think that's exactly right. And then, you know, obviously that's just one person's opinion and that's my opinion, but I've just found that, you know, it's a lot of people don't respond super well to vitriol, and there is always a place, like, there's a place where you have to get angry and you have to be like, here's, you know, but that's not my place and that's not who I am. My place is fun, exciting, weird, and that's what I can bring to the table. But Tony's the bad cop, right, Tony?
I'm keeping my mouth shut right now. I'm just like, I'm the mean one.
Well, no, but that actually, I think, is what makes it work, is that me and Tony have this really nice, like, binary relationship, or dichotomous relationship, where, you know, I'm coming in being like, let's just have fun, let's do this stuff, and Tony's like, well, let's look at it from this other angle, which is just as important, and I'll
right. And actually, so to actually add to your statement, one of the things that's interesting about GamerX is that it is, like, a super fun, super welcoming, safe environment, and, like, you could be, like, you know, the straightest, most, like, you know, Joe Schmoey person in the world and go to GamerX and have, like, tons and tons of fun. But at the same time, there is, like, extremely radical, like, you know, things going on at the event. You know, all sorts of things. And just, like, panels, you know, about feminism, people of color, and stuff like that. Like, race and religion. Like, you know, really serious, like, difficult topics that are, like, really tough to tackle. But at the same time, like, the convention itself is, like, this massive, like, space that has, like, a lot of different things that you can experience. And so you can kind of be like, oh, do I want to go to the panel that's, like, talking about race? You know what? I'm not super comfortable with that right now, so I'm going to not do that, right? But if you're like, hey, I absolutely, you know, if you're me and you're like, heck yeah, I want to go to a panel about race in video games, then you have that option.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I almost feel like it actually does tie back to privilege in that, like, for some of us, we've never been around queer gamers before, and we just want to be hanging out with those other queer gamers and playing Mario Kart or Mortal Kombat or whatever game and just hang out. And we don't want to be talking politics. We want 3 days where we can walk away from it and walk away from our problems and just hang out with other queer gamers for the first time in our lives. For someone like myself or other people who maybe have a little bit more privilege and they get to be around that, you know, I want to talk higher level. I like the high in-depth conversations about, you know, how do we move this conversation forward? You know, I like the debates, but for some people that's not their steez, or they might like it, but they don't want to do that weekend. They want to relax. They're taking, this is their vacation for the year. And so, you know, trying to provide a space where people can just relax and hang out and have fun and get drunk with their friends, great. But if some people are wanting, like, I want to go to that Zoe Quinn panel and I want to go to that panel that's a little bit more in depth about, you know, race, and there's a pretty, you know, hard-headed debate on it, like, that's, you know, it's interesting trying to kind of balance those two worlds.
Yeah, it's interesting because no matter what you do, there's always going to be someone who's not satisfied, because depending on what they were looking for, depending on what they got out of it for that weekend, there's always going to be that option of, well, I didn't quite get what I wanted and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it is what it is. People are going to make the convention experience what they make out of it themselves. And you can only go, here's what we have on offer. Hopefully you will enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's kind of something we found. And, you know, the best way we found to address it is basically just to have, like, the widest variety of experiences available that we possibly can, so that people can kind of then, like, just, like, a la carte, like, you know, figure out what exactly they want their experience to be. And through that, I mean, we've actually found that to work really well, like, going from the first to the second year, like, people the second year were really happy with a lot of the really versatile choices, you know, from being able to play Mario Kart to being able to play, like, you know, a game that's just, like, you know, 300,000 words of text. Those options, I think, are really useful and really powerful in a social way.
Yeah. Well, speaking about fun things, though, at the convention, there's a lot of bosses of honor that will be at GamerX, or GX3, as I'm guessing you should call it. Do you want to talk about a few of the bosses of honor and, like, kind of what con attendees will get out of having these bosses of honor at the convention?
Sure. And actually, to that point about the name, you know, it's either or. You know, the event is called GX3 this year, but it's still GamerX as in terms of the convention, which I know can be a little confusing. But basically, you know, the idea behind that is that there's a lot of people who were like, oh, I don't want to intrude on your safe space. I'm not gay. You know, is it still something for me? And we want to make it clear that it is for everyone. But at the end of the day, we're also not ashamed of the fact of, like, what our name is. It is run by a queer, you know, group of people for the most part, and it is focused on queer issues, at least in you know, a lot more than any other gaming convention. But yeah, I mean, it really is whatever, you know, you want to call it. But yeah, I mean, with our bosses of honor this year, I think that reflects that quite a bit. You know, so in the last 2 years, we've really been focusing on getting people who are queer, specifically queer, you know, to our convention, or they were fighting for queer rights. And this year, you know, we have people that are doing things that aren't necessarily as specifically queer. You know, we have people like, you know, Jennifer Hale, who is, you know, a voice actress who, you know, voices some really, really famous characters, Samus and Shepard from Mass Effect and all these great characters, but nothing specifically queer, but it's just a really cool, empowering, I think, thing, and it's someone really cool. You know, Natasha Allegri, who's a cartoonist for Bee and Puppy Cat, you know, she created a lot of cool queer characters with Fiona and Cake things in Adventure Time, but again, nothing specifically queer. Jamin Warren, creator of Killscreen, and you know, the host of the PBS game show, nothing specifically queer, but again, a lot of advocacy and social things. So Anita Sarkeesian, again, nothing specifically queer, but, you know, I think we're all familiar with her work. So a lot of really amazing people who aren't necessarily doing queer things, but are fighting for a cool, better future, while also, you know, integrating, like, Robert Yang, who's made some really weird but really cool queer games, you know, a lot of other really cool, you know, queer developers, Courtney Ziegler, who's the founder of TransHack. So things that are a little bit, Anthony Birch, the one of the lead writers for Borderlands 2, who's bi. So, you know, stuff that, like, again, is not specifically queer focused, but definitely has, I mean, there's some really cool queer stuff in Borderlands 2, and also we want to have it by Boss of Honor. So, yeah, you know, I think that our Bosses of Honor this year, we're trying to kind of showcase that the diversity that we're trying to expand into, which is not just focusing on queer issues, but focusing on people who are fighting for a less toxic gaming environment, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes total sense, and, you know, I'm excited because I've never actually been to GamerX. So this is super exciting for me. And plus, I get a chance to go to California in December when it's winter here in Chicago. So you may not get rid of me. Who knows?
I feel like that happens a lot, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the nice things about having our event in December is that the weather will be very nice. You can go to the pool if you really want to. San Jose is generally
a
good
heated
70,
pool,
75
by the way.
Every day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about the guest of honors myself. Just a lot of all the people that we got are all like super super amazing. I'm really excited about their keynotes. Their keynotes all look really good. I've been kind of working with them on deciding exactly what people would like the most from them. I don't know if anybody's looked yet at our schedule, which you can go to like gx3.sched.com. It's like SCHED. On the schedule, we have several of our panels and keynotes, and Robert Yang's went up recently, and it's, I think, the most attended one so far, because you can set yourself up to remind you to attend that panel. And I believe it's because the name of his panel is pretty spectacular, which is this is Robert Yang's keynote at GamerX, which is, "That one time I repeatedly gave birth to fully grown wolves and other gay sex games that we deserve."
Well, what can you say to that?
I have a hard time picturing anyone who reads that and doesn't want to check out what the heck is going on there.
And, you know, and that all fits into our whole vibe of, like, it's weird, it's wacky, but also it is, like, I mean, if you've ever played any of Robert Yang's games, they're all different and interesting. But they're the games that we do deserve. We deserve to have those kind of weird games. They should exist, and they should be celebrated. And so we're super excited to be able to work with them.
And if you haven't had the pleasure of sitting through a panel or a talk of Robert Yang's, like, it will be quite a treat, because no matter how silly or weird, you know, his topic is, he will explain exactly how it is incredibly socially relevant and important, and you will walk away being like, holy wow, I that would have taken me years to figure out on my own. He is a very smart person.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. Midboss is also developing read-only memories. Can you talk about that, maybe where it's at in the development process? When I was looking at it, it's $10, right? So you're not like charging a lot.
Yeah, without sobbing quietly or openly about how cheap this incredible game is going to be. I do think it's actually pretty cool that the price is so low. Originally, I think the game was intended to be much smaller, like a quickly digested little like experience. But it kind of grew into this really like, I don't know. I mean, like, I might be biased, but I don't know that I am, actually, because I tried to keep my distance a little bit from the production of it for a while so that I could kind of try to enjoy it. And I'm a big fan of a lot of the older adventure games. You know, Gabriel Knight 1 is actually probably my favorite adventure game. And, you know, a lot of people don't even know what Gabriel Knight is. And this game is really good. Like, I'm actually really into it. The game has so many songs in it. Like, the soundtrack just, like, it seems really huge because there's this, like, really awesome song, and then you'll talk to some new person, and suddenly it's a different song and stuff. And, like, the art's really good. The animations are really good. Like, I guess I often find myself, and this is kind of just me in general. Like, I'm always a nostalgia person. Like, I really loved a lot of games in the 90s, and there's a lot of games in the 2000s that I wasn't a big fan of. But I always find myself kind of wishing for, like, a revival of the adventure game genre. And I do think that we're seeing some of that with, like, The Walking Dead, and a little bit with how, like, Dragon Age and stuff like that play. But to see something that's a little bit more closer, you know, to the original format, But still made a little bit more modern, you know, like, because read-only memory has all those, like, a lot of branching tree options for the story, and, like, you know, the UI is a lot easier to use. But just seeing that something like that, it's just, like, I don't know, it's like I'd kind of forgotten what the adventure game genre was like, and playing through read-only memories, which is something I'm doing right now, has been just, like, really fun. And I kind of hope that it makes other people make more adventure games like this, too. Because I almost feel like we forgot that this was a thing.
That's pretty awesome. I can't wait, and whenever it comes out, I'll definitely stream it and talk about it. And whenever it's on PS4, I'll definitely do some streaming for you all, because I'm excited. And this is honestly me just being lazy. It's easier for me to stream on the PS4 than the PC, so... but I'm excited, so that is my reminder to go get a pre-order of Read Only Memories.
Same here.
cool, we will include a link to the demo in the show notes. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to ask, is Ramona in the demo? Oh, she's like everyone's favorite character. Okay. No, Alfie, stop with the Alfie. Aw, poor Alfie.
Aw. Well, I look forward to meeting Alfie and everyone else, and we'll definitely have a link to the demo in the show notes. So we will go play it, and if it's okay to stream it and I can figure out PC streaming, I will try to show the demo. But, you know, we've talked a lot about read-only memories, but you're also showing Gaming in Color, which I'm really excited about. I actually bought it on Steam. I was wondering if you wanted to talk about the film a little bit, because I'm a nerd for seeing it at GamerX in the winter, I should say.
Yeah, have you gotten a chance to watch it?
I watched a little bit, but then, you know, life got in the way. So
you know,
I've got it on Steam.
It's actually really fun to watch it. So for me, how do I put it? For me, I'm actually more likely to watch something I can, like, put on Netflix and, like, lay down and, like, relax and watch, you know? And this is, like, the perfect kind of movie for that. This is, like, exactly, like, if I have friends over or something like that and we're just kind of chilling or whatever and we just want to watch something interesting, this is the kind of movie that I would put on. So, like, I'm really, really fond of the fact that, like, it's in a format that I really appreciate, because I'm really not much of a, like, action, like, you know, I don't want to see explosions or anything like that. I want to just relax. And it's so interesting, and I really do like watching it with other people, because it sparks a lot of really good conversations. One thing we've learned from kind of showing it off at other places is, first off, every time I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, I forget how good this movie is. Afterwards, there's always people just talking about it, like, nonstop, like, until people are, like, dispersed, right? If there's, like, a theater or something like that, and they're always talking about it. And I love that. That's, like, my favorite thing. Like, that's exactly what I want out of, like, a documentary or something like this, right? Because, I mean, like, originally, like, that's one of the main things that you know, Gaming in Color was made for, you know, like, with us and, like, the vision of, like, Philip Jones, the director, like, we just wanted to make it so that people would talk about this, right? Like, it was kind of like GamerX. Like, GamerX started because there was no LGBT gaming convention, right? Gaming in Color was started because there was no documentary about LGBT in gaming. Like, it was made so that it would exist. And then maybe, hopefully, you know, maybe there'll be a Gaming in Color too, or maybe somebody else will make something like that, right? But it's very interesting, and I think that if you are like a queer person who is in games and is like very very how do I say involved in like the communities around that, I think that a lot of the stuff that's talked about will be very, like, familiar to you. You know, you'll be like, oh, I know. Like, yeah, I absolutely experience that all the time or whatever, right? And so you get to kind of see, like, how a few people from, like, different perspectives, like, people who are, like, game developers, people who are, you know, just fans, people who are professors and stuff like that, how, you know, and sociologists or whatever, how they interact with these things. But then also, like, I think that if you are not, like, an LGBT gamer, or at least one that hasn't really experience too much of like the social aspect of it, because maybe you don't, you know, maybe people just assume that you're straight or something, and you just let that slide or whatever, right? I think that this subject it can be really, really, really fascinating, and like definitely like a lot of like straight people that I've seen, or like people who aren't in gaming, like their minds have been just like blown by like a lot of the concepts that have been explained in this movie. And it's all very, it's put very fairly, you know. It's not, there's no like claims being made that like, oh well, you know, this is bad or whatever. It's the whole movie is basically like, well, I experienced this, you know, and like people seem to do this, and like, you know, this, you know. And so it's all put in this like really very easily digestible package for you. I love the movie, and I'm actually always really excited every time it gets shown off, especially in like a public setting. I really encourage anybody who hasn't seen it yet to see it, and seeing it with friends is really, really an awesome experience. Like, definitely, like, seeing it a second time with friends can be really rewarding, because the conversations that lead after are great.
Oh, that's so cool. I'm really excited to see it on the big screen in December.
Yeah. You get to see poor Colleen Macklin with a cold. She was such a trooper. I mean, to be honest, Colleen Macklin with a cold is still, like, 50 times hotter than any of us will ever be. She was a trooper. She had a cold, and she just did it. She powered through it, and, like, she's so good in that movie. Naomi Clark, yeah, everyone on that movie is really great.
Sweet.
I can understand that impulse.
Yeah.
Explaining things over and over does seem to get very repetitive.
And of course, there will be people who will never want to listen. I think my favorite thing was when Twitch streamed Gaming in Color on their channel. Of course, a bunch of like trolls showed up from, you know, 4chan or whatever they come from. And it was funny because one of my favorite moments was that I think I took a screenshot of it, but I've lost it since. One of the trolls said, "If you don't, I forget what it was, something like, but if you don't like it, why don't you just make video games then?" And the person that was on screen was George Sclaeres, one of the creators of League of Legends.
Oh my god.
And it was so funny that, like, that would be, the juxtaposition of that was just so, like, too good. The, like, oh, why don't you make video games then instead of complaining? Like, well, I'm pretty sure League of Legends, you know, it works on this little tiny indie game called League of Legends. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's really small, you know?
And definitely. I just want to make it clear, when I said explaining things over and over can be repetitive, you know, I explain things for money. I can't imagine what it would be like for that to be like just part of who you are and your day, which is one of the many reasons that we love your mission statement for GamerX, and we're very glad you have such an inclusive convention. Have you had, you know, any other, like, pushback against your mission to be diverse and inclusive for everyone?
Well, I mean, how do I put it? So the thing is that, I mean, we have, and we will, we always will, from, like, you know, just anonymous people on the internet, you know, that's always going to be a thing. But I think we kind of just, you know, I think we know that that's always going to be a thing. We know that there's always going to be people who are really unhappy to see social change, and that, you know, their opinions that, you know, X, Y, or Z person shouldn't have rights is becoming less and less popular, you know, and then those people are always going to take it out on us, and we kind of know that. But one of the things that I think was kind of shocking when we started out was the pushback that we got from companies, especially with regards to, like, sponsorship. Even for companies who, you know, they're, like, AAA companies or whatever, right? Like, video game companies, who the staff of which would be like, oh, that's super cool that you're doing that. That's really wonderful, whatever, right? As soon as we'd be like, yeah, would you like to be a part of it? They'd be like, oh no, that's too political for us, or something like that, right? Which is hilarious, like, to think that, like, that not showing up at, like, a gay event is somehow, like, somehow that's not political. Which, like, that's an interesting concept. Like abstaining from LGBT things because abstaining from LGBT things is somehow not political. Like, and it was actually a stark contrast, like, comparatively to what, like, other, you know, other industries and stuff like that were like, you know. I think, you know, MailChimp is kind of a really great example. And obviously not that the tech field is always great, right? But I remember when MailChimp, you know, we basically, like, described the thing, and they were like, that's something we want to exist, and we're going to help you as much as we can. And it was just like, bam, done, right? Whereas, you know, we just definitely, like, from a lot of, like, gaming companies, a lot of them were just very, like, oh, I don't know if that's, like, if we can do that, that's, you know, which was somewhat ridiculous, you know, given that it's, like, not 1992 anymore. But, you know, at the same time, I understand that there are definitely companies out there that think it is. But I don't know, it's interesting, though, because, you know, a lot of the companies that actually wind up doing kind of better are the ones that are kind of more aware that, like, the social climate on these issues have been changing and continue to change. And that, you know, actually not supporting LGBT things is starting to look bad, right? And you know, a lot of companies are actually you know, have been joining us lately, just because, you know, they understand that, you know, the people don't want to pretend that gay people don't exist anymore. Like, that's like, yes, there's a few people out there, but the majority of people out there, you know, in America especially, like, they know that gay people exist, you know, and they're not going to get that mad when a company says that they do. But yeah, I mean, that was a thing, and I think that's something that we'll be dealing with, and you know, as things go, like, you know, if you notice, like, our sponsors, like, the people that come to our company, the list grows over time, and, you know, these are companies that are they're supporting the fact that their audience is diverse, you know, that the people that use their products or the people that use their services or play their games or whatever, that there's all sorts of people there, right? And that these are people they want to talk to, get the opinions of, or maybe even hire. So yeah.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about, you know, some heavy things, some fun things, but I just want to, as we wind down and get toward the end, is ask a silly question for fun, because I like this question, and I'm a nerd, and I like asking other people. And I was reminded of the question when Inarashi was on, because Kiva was like, you must ask Kaylin this question, so I just randomly throw it in the show notes for fun. So, both Matt and Tony, if you had to fight something... would you rather fight a horse-sized duck or a 100 duck-sized horses?
This is really tough because I've been playing a lot of duck game, and so I'm familiar with, which, by the way, if you guys have not played Duck Game, or people out there listening, you need to go to Steam and download Duck Game. It's $15, it's like $13. It is basically Super Smash Brothers but with ducks and with weapons, you know, and it's amazing. It's one-hit kills, super fast, super fun. There's a dedicated quack button. It is amazing. So go try Duck Game. And there's actually a cameo by a read-only memories character in the game. But that's actually, even if it wasn't in there, I remember playing it for the first time, and I begged on my hands and knees. I was like, can you please put our character in this game? This is the most amazing game. And he was like, this is his first game. He's like, yeah, whatever, sure, awesome. And now the game was just like, it's only been out like a month, and it was on like PewDiePie and Game Grumps, and it is blowing up the internet. Anyways, play Duck Game. But I've learned that ducks can be very, very scary. And so a horse-sized duck sounds pretty scary to me, although it does sound very fluffy and loving. 100 duck-sized horses, they'd be very small, but ducks, as horses, they kick with their hind legs, and I can't imagine 100 horses kicking me in the face. So I guess I'll have to go with a horse-sized duck, because I could probably just jump on its back and, like, ride it and try to subdue it from the back, like Shadow of the Colossus, if you will. But 100 duck-sized horses, that sounds like a chicken and the Link situation, and as you know, Link never wins that situation. So I'm going to go with a horse-sized duck, and that's going to be my final answer.
Okay.
So I'm terrified of birds. And if you go ahead and Google duck with teeth, yeah. So I would definitely go with the 100 duck-sized horses, or you could turn that into 1,000, because a horse-sized duck sounds like possibly the most terrifying thing that I've ever heard of in my life. My only experience with birds in any near proximity is, like, quote-unquote, they bite you. And that's, like, that's basically, like, my relationship with birds. That's, like, that's how I understand birds to function.
But Tony, I don't think you understand. Ducks are pretty large. Like, if the question was, like, 100 cat-shaped-sized horses, like, then I'd, or, like, 1,000 rat-shaped horses, like, then it's, like, small and tiny. But ducks are actually...
I'll make do. I don't care. just no birds. I just do not do birds. Okay, you wanna know a dark thing about me? This is about as dark as I get. I kicked every bird out of my Animal Crossing town.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Wow. First of all, that goes into a whole host of ethical issues that I don't even know if I want to start on.
It actually originated from my friend Miguel doing a campaign to kick all the cats out of his town. And I was like, fine, I'm going to kick all the birds out of my town because I hate birds. And he loves birds. So it was like a cats versus birds scenario going on.
I don't know. That sounds like some spiteful retaliation, and I don't like it.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Yeah, but definitely Google like duck with teeth, and you will understand forever my answer.
I've seen that photo, and I closed the tab and was like, I'm done with the internet for a while.
Yeah, so yeah. I was like, going to turn my computer off.
Nope. Mm-mm. I was like, that's a duck. That was like, so it bred with the alien from the movies, and that's yeah, what came out.
It's an H.R. Geiger duck, yeah.
It's something. So I was like, the fuck is that? That's not a... I was convinced someone photoshopped it, and then I kept finding it, and I'm like... Oh, that's real. If I see a duck, I'm running the other way. Yeah. And geese. Geese are really mean.
Yeah, and geese have teeth.
Yes, and they're big. We see geese in Chicago, and I'm like, why are you here? Go away, geese.
For some reason, Google Image Search also gave me a picture of Drake, but without teeth. Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Well, that... We might just have to throw that in somehow or as a link just for fun because I'm trying to figure out why Google
Drake without teeth. Well, I guess that makes sense because the male duck is a drake, right? So.
Oh.
It's
okay.
A strange photo, though. Not the handsomest that Drake has been.
Oh, my God. I will have to look at that once we're done recording because I don't want some bizarre reaction to this toothless Drake.
You're just shouting, not my baby.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, I looked at it.
Okay, now I've got to look. And while I do that, oh my God, that is like fucked up. That's just like Drake in like 20 years. What the fuck?
If Drake can keep his skin looking that youthful in 20 years, then I don't even mind the missing.
Yeah, yeah, you can get dentures. That's fine. Yeah. If he's that cute in the future, deal.
Well, you've heard the saying that black don't crack. So. I take it you've never heard that, David?
No, I haven't.
I have dated much older black men, so I'm aware of this.
So, as a fun guessing game, since we brought up black don't crack, I don't know if Tony knows how old I am, and Matt, neither of you cheating to look on Facebook. Let's play my favorite game. How old do you think I am?
As someone who values her life, I actually do not play this game.
It's fine. I totally don't. I brought it up. I'm fine with it. I totally don't care.
Man, I mean, I feel the same way as Tony. This
See, the thing
like...
is, it makes me want to say hi, but I really, I want to say, like, 32.
Oh my God, I love you, Tony. I'm buying you all the drinks in December. I'm actually 42.
Oh, wow. Well, good. So... After this, you can give me moisturizer tips if you have any, because I think I look much older than you, so I could use the help.
Matt's just gone suddenly silent, like, I'm not playing this game.
You know,
Matt's like, as a gay man, I don't have to deal with this.
No, well, yeah, right. You know, I just like that, you know, I feel like there's a lot of people who I feel like they get out of gaming and they lose their passion for gaming, especially people who are, like, you know, from maybe, like, generationally, like, a little bit older. And I feel like the fact that you're so passionate about gaming and making it better is, like, really actually super inspirational to me.
Yay. Yeah, what's funny is, and we had a little bit of this conversation with Kaylin when she was on Inarashi, about how even, like, 2 years ago, I would have never seen myself in this position. Like, I've always been a gamer, and, you know, I don't know if Monver actually listens to the show, but part of what inspires me so much is I was at GDC in 2014, actually just tagging along with a friend who wanted to get in the industry, and I went to Monver's speech about every ism in the world, and I actually cried during that speech, during his talk, and then I ran into him randomly, and we started chatting, and then after I Need Diverse Games took off, we started chatting again. He's been a real, you know, advocate for diversity since, you know, day one of being in the industry, and, you know, that passion is there, because this is something I spend a lot of time and money on, and I love gaming. It's my go-to thing to kind of unwind, and the fact that I can't find myself or be myself fully in these digital worlds I spend a lot of time in is something that just really, really pisses me off and that I want to make better. I want to put myself out of business eventually is what I'd love to do, or just have diversity not be a thing that I actually have to fight for. It just is. And that was my 10-second elevator speech for why I keep doing what I'm doing and what inspires me.
Yay!
Yeah, no, that's something that I've said quite a bit, you know, is just like, at the end of the day, I would, if Gamer X was totally unnecessary and was something that was actually like, yeah, like, people are like, yeah, this isn't really an issue, I would be great. I mean, I love putting on these events, and I would figure something else out to do. Like, I would much rather not have to fight for these things. I would love to live in that world where it's not an issue, but,
I mean, I'm actually of the belief that, you know what, Even if we did manage to reach that utopia, like, a themed party is still a thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, no offense to everyone else, but gays do throw the best parties.
That is true. I'm trans. I just sit around and watch Steven Universe with all my friends.
It seems to be a common hobby.
Yeah. You want to marathon the last two seasons again? Like, that's Friday. Like, maybe we'll drink. Who knows?
You, I don't know. I found you end up watching more than you intended because they're tiny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, if you want to spend an hour doing it, that's three, or maybe it's four. Now it's over an hour. Well, never mind.
Yeah. No, yeah, definitely. It's like getting a bag of, like, Skittles, and you're like, oh, just eat one. Nope.
The last thing we really wanted to ask was, what else is going on with, you both in terms of Midboss and GamerX? Anything planned once the convention is over?
Well, you know, we're still figuring out what we're going to be doing, both for, you know, once we release the game, we're going to be kind of seeing, you know, what, if we're going to be doing DLC for the game, or if we have some other, you know, game ideas in mind. We've been talking to some companies, so, be on the lookout for what's next for that. With GamerX, you know, this is our first year bringing it to San Jose and also moving it to December, and we're going to see kind of how that works. And so depending on, you know, what works and what doesn't, you know, we'll have some announcements for 2016. But, you know, we did announce it not too long ago, but we are actually launching GamerX Australia, which is going to be in Sydney in March. And although we are not involved in the day-to-day on that, we're actually working with some really, really awesome queer gamers. One of the guys is the guy who founded Sydney Gamers. Another one is this really big person who's involved in the queer industry down in Australia, and we're basically helping them get it off the ground and, you know, working really closely though with them in creating kind of that gamer experience, but in Australia. And, you know, probably I don't know how you Australianize it, but maybe they'll have like a Vegemite like break room or something. And but we're super excited about doing that, and I've never been to Australia, and I'm super excited about getting a chance to work with them. And so that's definitely coming down the pipeline. And you know, we're certainly not planning on going anywhere. So we have some cool things for 2016 in our minds, but we're also trying not to look past, you know, this year. Just like the last 2 years, it's still very much like make it or break it. In that, you know, if the con does not do well enough to pay for itself, then you know, we don't have like a reserve fund of money to put into it. So we need to make sure that, you know, it goes really well, and that it's something that is, you know, well attended and well you know, sponsored. And if that is the case, that we can continue doing it, then you know, we don't have any plans of going anywhere.
Yay. Well, this will be exciting, and oh my god, I wish I could totally go to Australia, but you know, knowing less than a year out probably means it may not happen, but I'm very excited to hear about GamerX Australia. And
I don't want to go to Australia. It's like everything can kill you there. I'm a big wuss. I don't want to do that. I'm scared.
Oh my god, did you see the picture of the wolf spider mother and like her babies on the electrical power thing that was all over the internet the last couple days?
No.
I haven't, but no, thank you.
It is the most terrifying picture in the world. I literally was like, I don't want to go to Australia anymore. I really don't want to go to Australia anymore.
I have a thing I'm working on that involves doing research about spiders. There was an actual study in Australia that found that spiders that live in cities get bigger than spiders that live...
Don't tell me that! Jesus Christ!
It's because concrete is hotter and food is more abundant.
Do they have a way of keeping them out of Sydney? Because I will literally, I will freak out and scream and run away. I will jump into the ocean if I see one of those. Just saying.
I'll be right with you. I might run you down.
Yeah, no, I don't. There's a reason why I like San Francisco, and that there is like seemingly no wildlife. Except for Golden Gate Park, and I enjoy that because rattlesnakes and bees, and I don't like any of that stuff. The end.
Yeah, no, that's okay, because, I mean, we get random wildlife here, and that's enough for me. I don't need big fucking spiders.
I like deer. Deers are good. Bunnies are fine.
Deer are tasty. They are.
Yesterday morning, I was out on our balcony, and I'm in Oregon now, so we have a bunch of trees. It's just how Oregon works. And there were these squirrels, and I realized that gray squirrels really are just rats with fluffy tails. They're awful.
Yeah, that's all we have over here, I think.
They're monsters.
Red squirrels are super pretty, although I heard they're really mean.
Well, yes. They're city animals, so it is what it is.
Like me.
I don't think you're mean, though.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm tough. I just picture me crossing my arms when I say that.
Yes.
And you're incredibly
stern and tough.
Yeah, it's spelled T-U-F-F. I'm tough.
Well, we've actually been talking for quite a while. And I want to be respectful of everyone's time because, you know, like, yeah. It's 2 hours later for me and an hour later for David. But I wanted to kind of wrap up with talking about what we're all playing and then, you know, where folks can find you all online. So, Tony and Matt, since you are our guests, please feel free to go first with what you are playing lately.
So, it's depressingly enough, I always wish that my answer to this question wasn't just one, more Dwarf Fortress, and two, more League of Legends. But unfortunately, I think that's actually the answer. some friends of mine have been getting me to play a lot of League lately, and it's the only thing I can really find myself to, like, having time to play, just because I can be like, all right, I'm going to take a 30-minute break from work and play League of Legends, and then it's done, right? And for those who play League, I started playing Support Annie, and I found that is, like, the cruelest thing you can do to the enemy team. But yeah, that's basically what I've been playing.
It is really nice to talk to somebody else who's played Dwarf Fortress and gotten past the menus.
Oh yeah, I'm one of like five people, I think. But I actually wanted to do a thing where I do like Dwarf Fortress classes for like women. Like where like I teach a bunch of women how to play Dwarf Fortress, because I don't want to be the only one. But yeah, I'm actually incredibly good at Dwarf Fortress, and the people who taught me how to play don't even know what I'm talking about when I talk to them about it, which is sad, because now I don't have anybody to talk to about it.
You should stream it. I would watch it.
I kind of want to, but it's people always say they would have no idea what they're looking at. So I don't know. I might.
I use a little graphical replacer that seems to solve that problem pretty well.
Oh yeah, I use the Phoebus tile set too.
Otherwise, it's like a lot of reading too.
Yeah,
Matt? Yeah. I watched Tony play it. I was so confused.
Yeah, this stuff going on. Everything, the Crafts Dwarf ship is of the highest quality, or all Crafts Dwarf ship. Anyways, yeah.
I find that Dwarf Fortress makes you have to be a terrible person when you're like, what do I do with all these cats?
Oh, food now. So many kitten leather gloves. Oh, it's the saddest.
I'm glad you all can't see the face I just made in my computer. Matt, what have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing Rocket League, which is super fun, and I'm having a lot of fun, you know, shooting balls with my car, and that's fun. I also recently purchased Persona Q, and in my little trips back and forth to New York, I've been playing Persona Q, and it's good. It's very, like, I don't know what I expected from it. It's very good, and it combines Persona 4 and Persona 3, and the gameplay is fine, and the story's fine, but that's, like, the issue, is that it's very, like, I don't know. It's just kind of there, you know. The story is really, really inconsequential. It makes it clear from the beginning that it's just supposed to be like a fun crossover, you know. That's just like, hey, we're having fun. Everyone's having fun. Like, let's all go to school together and we're having fun. And it's fun. But I don't know. Part of the reason why I like Persona 4 is that there was this kind of, you know, although it was super cute and fun, there was definitely this, like, larger, kind of scarier, you know, like, story and you know, climax of a story. And right now, it's just kind of like, let's just, you know, run around and have fun. And it's like, almost a little too cute and doesn't really have any, like, point. But I'm having fun with it, I guess.
Cool. And then there's something called YMBAB that, yeah, you said you were playing. What is that?
So, on the plane, I was trying to find some games that I could play that don't require the internet, which is really hard. So I found a game called, You Must Build a Boat, which is basically like the sequel to 1 million or 100,000 or 10 million. And there's a game called 10 million where it's like kind of a match 3, but as you match it, you like go through the dungeon and collect items and stuff. And You Must Build a Boat is basically the same thing, but you basically, as you collect monsters, they go into your boat, and your boat gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and the monsters, like, end up, you know, selling you items, things like that, that you can use to get further along in the thing. Because it's sort of like an infinite runner, but you, every time you die, you get more items that make it so that way when you go through it again, you can, you know, have better skills and stats. So that way you can get further and further, and, you know, the opening things are, like, nothing. So You Must Build a Boat. It's, like, $3. It doesn't require the internet. It's fun if you, like, match 3 games, and doesn't have any annoying, like, free-to-play elements at all.
Sweet. And you've been playing a little Hearthstone, right?
I've never played an online match of it. I just got through the tutorial, but I've been really promising myself I would try it. I have feelings about it. I do feel like it's pretty simplistic, and I don't know if I'm going to end up liking it, but I do like that they kind of fixed the biggest issue with Magic, which is that, you know, the whole, like, land issue, where it's like, oh, I don't have enough land, I can't cast my things, or it's too much. With Hearthstone, you get 1 mana the first turn, 2 the second, 3 the third, and it feels like that just, like, seems very, like, natural, and it almost seems, like, very silly that Magic didn't implement a system like that a long time ago. But I like everything else with Magic. I like the combos, I like the strategy of when you play the cards and how you do it, and it seems like Hearthstone is just kind of like go all out, just blip, and I don't know, it doesn't seem as like strategic as Magic, but I don't know, I only started, so maybe I'm wrong.
I know, I haven't even got through the tutorial. I kept losing that last match in the tutorial. I'm like, ah, fuck it.
Yeah, I have some feelings about Hearthstone.
Oh dear,
they're not super popular.
It
feels like a very It just feels like a very pay to win game, because it's a lot about who has the best cards. Very often, unfortunately.
Oh, it totally is. Actually, our friend Steve Lubitz, Wicked Good on Twitter of Isometric, has had a lot to say about Hearthstone, especially with a lot of the changes that have just come through. And he was actually streaming it right before we started recording, so it was kind of interesting to watch. Because, like I said, I have not even got the tutorial. I don't know. I tried Magic the Gathering ages ago, and maybe I just can't do card games well, but it seems very much like you can get so far, and then you have to start spending money to be good at it.
Yeah.
Well, I will go next to last, because I know that David has been playing a game that mostly everyone has feelings about, and I'll leave that discussion for last. So I actually have gone back to The Witcher 3. I had a chance to stream it yesterday, and by the time this airs, who knows, maybe I'll finally be done with The Witcher. I don't know, because it seems like the game never ends. Made some more progress, so yay. I've played the Dragon Age Inquisition new DLC called The Descent. I am stuck on the boss. I've gotten a lot of good tips on how to beat this boss. So hopefully by the time we record again, I will have finally gotten past the very golem-y kind of boss, without spoiling anything. And actually, I just played Maddie Meyer's Twine game today called Siren for Hire.
Oh, that's the superhero one, right?
Yes. And it was really interesting, and it was a long game for a Twine game, but it was very engaging, and I want to go back and make different choices, and I'll have a link to that on the show notes, and I've been tweeting about it. So it's very interesting, because it's, I don't want to say for a Twine game, it's deep, but it's really engaging about the relationships between these women, and, it was reading through the text and making these choices, and I actually saw past, present, and other friendships and relationships I've had with other women reflected in how these characters interacted, so I thought it was really interesting, and I'm hoping to get Maddie either to write something about it for Any Diverse Games, or maybe get her on a future show after everyone is like, oh my god, not so busy. So yeah, I will have a link to Siren for Hire in the notes, and I will keep tweeting about it as we take forever to get episodes up, because we're still way ahead of ourselves. And
sometimes we forget our listeners are in the future, so...
Yes, so dear listener, by the time you hear this, hopefully Maddie will have another game out. Yay! So last but definitely not least, David, what have you been playing?
I've basically only been playing Fallout Shelter, because the Android port came out, I think it was like last Wednesday, or
I
Thursday.
Think so.
And thinking about it now, to explain to people from the future, I had been playing through Shadowrun Dragonfall before Shadowrun Hong Kong comes out, and Shadowrun Hong Kong comes out the day after we recorded this, so...
So hopefully we will see David again on the next podcast. If not, I may need a stand-in.
I'm super interested in... How does, Shadowrun play like? I haven't actually played it.
It plays like Fallout Tactics if it had a better story. It's turn-based, and you control your team of four people, or in the first one, yourself and whoever you hired, or whoever's there.
And it's cyberpunk?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a Shadowrun is like a cyberpunk fantasy with, elves and dwarves.
Okay.
The actual tabletop game, at one point, I was looking at the way various tabletop games describe humans. And I was impressed to find that the third edition of Shadowrun, their description of humans is basically an essay on how privilege works.
Oh, interesting.
Because, there are elves and dwarves and so on.
Wow, that's really cool.
Huh, interesting.
Okay, so I kind of want to ask your feedback on Fallout Shelter.
Oh, certainly.
So, yeah, I mean, tell me your thoughts first before I kind of want to see why you like or don't like it before I kind of pick it apart.
Oh, well... don't worry about offending me. I think Bethesda's awful comparatively. it's a game I can play while I'm actually doing work, because it's slow enough that I can forget about it for 15 minutes, but also fast enough so it feels like something's happening. I think that's at the heart of why I play it.
So for me. I grew up loving SimTower. SimTower was my game. And so one of the first issues I have with a game like Fallout Shelter is very similar to what I have an issue with Tiny Tower, which is that it's I don't feel like that kind of type of game should be a free-to-play kind of game, because it reward, it's the kind of game where it's I don't have the things I need right now, or I can't do anything. Guess I gotta stop playing, or I guess I gotta, buy things. And I really don't like that feeling when I'm in a building game. I want to be able to build as much as I want until I'm done building, or until I need to get more money. And so I feel like that free-to-play can be a little frustrating. I'm also just really surprised that they I really thought this game was just going to be like a promotional vehicle for Fallout 4, and I'm really surprised that they decided to go the route of a free-to-play in-game purchases. It just feels very, like, scummy.
One thing about that I've discovered, though, is the only thing... Okay, first of all, the in-game purchases don't work for me. They just... Maybe it's everyone on Android, but I can't even get it to come up right. But you still get the only thing you can purchase just, you know, occasionally for fulfilling goals in the game. So it's not like it's really necessary.
Right, but it's still like one of those things where, like, if you're playing it, like, you know, you can play it for 20 minutes, and then you're like, okay, well, you're done, unless you're either willing to spend money or do the rushing, which the rushing thing can kill you. You know, you can end up destroying your entire place because everyone is, you know, once you start a fire or you let in the raiders or whatever, it's, or, you know, the rad roaches, it's like, oh, well, everything got destroyed. And so really the only way to play is like, okay, you've done everything you can, then you have to wait. And then you have to come back and check it every, you know, 4 hours. And so, to me, like, okay, and then this is just in general, I find like time management type of games are just very like offensive just in terms of like, as a gameplay element, you know, and I totally get other people can love that, but I just find it to be very, like, I really thought that they were going to make this a game that was just like, here's a really fun free game that we're providing as a way to you know, get people excited for Fallout 4. And so I was also really surprised. I originally thought that this game was a way to, like, you know, build your vault, and then that vault number and maybe some small things you did actually go into the story. It's like a prequel to Fallout 4. I thought there would be this really cool integrated thing. Instead, they're like, nah, here's this, like, you know, this game that is very much a microtransaction game that has nothing to do with the Fallout, you know, with you know, any of the mainline stuff, and you can't integrate it into your game or anything like that. And I don't know, it just feels a little like odd to be like, you know, put out this money making type of game before the actual big game they want to put out. I don't know, and I guess to me, I just don't like time management type games. I really basically this all comes down to, I want SimTower 2. Thank you.
There are other parts of it people have complained about, because anything where you're allowed to, like, because it goes down to the level where you're, like, allowed to control people and put them in the same bedroom, and eventually they'll just be okay with that.
Yeah, some of the gendered roles and things that I've seen in the game are a little interesting, the way that they do it, and I don't know if I would have written them that way. I mean, I don't think that it's, like, it's something that, and this just goes back into, like, kind of how I approach diversity issues in gaming. Like, I certainly don't think it was, like, malicious. I don't think they went out of their way to be like, let's write these women as being, you know, like, what, like, you know, but they basically made it in a way where, like, the... I don't know, the way that it handles pregnancy and the way, and how the characters treat women before and after that, it comes off just very, like, old school and in a bad way. Very, like, you know what I mean? It perpetuates this kind of gross, like, idea of, like, what a nuclear family should look like from the 50s. And I get that that's in theme of the Fallout world.
Ish?
Sort of, yeah. It's just very regressive.
Yeah. The one thing, though, is that it doesn't actually represent that well at all, because it doesn't, as far as I can tell, have any sort of marriage system, so...
Yeah. Something to think about.
Yeah, and, yeah, it does feel like a Fallout-themed other sort of game, but I said the same thing about Fallout 3, so...
Right, and you know, this is just, like, me being, like, a really silly nerd, in terms of, like, I think the game is fine, and it's certainly not, like, it's not, like, hatred or something stupid where you should feel bad about liking it. It's still a good game. Those were just my frustrations with it, but mostly I was frustrated because, like, every time I got, like, to maybe 20 inhabitants or so, like, rad roaches or raiders would come in, and they would kill everybody, and it was just like, I literally had to start the game over again, and I was like, this is the worst, and so maybe I just got really unlucky.
There is a degree of luck, because you get the first three lunchboxes, and you can send people out, but that's the only way to, like, get weapons at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, and if you don't have weapons, those rad roaches come in, it's like, G.O., and... Yeah,
and both of those are luck-based mechanics.
Yeah, that's the worst, and I've heard that now there's death claws and stuff that come in, and...
I haven't seen those.
Yeah, that's scary.
Is that like Santa Claus?
Yeah. You know, I gotta say, whoever implemented death claws, I guess starting with Fallout 3, they really programmed them in a way to make them absolutely terrifying, and not because of like the way that they look, because obviously they look and sound scary, but they actually managed to make it in gameplay. They are just so, you know, like they're beatable if you have the right weapons and you're super fast, but they are like almost, if you see one, it's pretty much like, well, that's, you're dead now.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the things about, like, Fallout 3 that I haven't actually written a piece on, but I keep meaning to, is that Fallout 3 is full of moments that feel right until you think about it too long. And you're like, that doesn't really fit in the canon that we have established, or just, you know, what's right and wrong.
I'm sure they had someone in their game who was like, does this emotionally feel right? And that's something that we've been doing with Read Only Memories right now, where, like, we're now, the game's basically done. Like, we could release it tomorrow. But as I'm playing through some of the scenes, I'm like, what was the point of this scene? Was it to make the player feel sad? Was it to make the, you know, the player, like, you know, whatever? And sometimes I'm playing it and I'm like, it was written that way, but I don't feel that way. I'm coming out of the scene being like, oh, that was a funny scene or a silly, you know, whatever. And it doesn't read correctly. And so they probably had someone who was there being like, this scene doesn't read correctly. And that can be through gameplay where it's like, this should be terrifying. And it's not because the boss is too easy. And, you know, being able to change the gameplay to match the emotion that you want, I think is like this like really cool skill that I'm trying to learn that, obviously, people on Fallout have that skill.
One interesting thing, and I'm sorry for being part of the, like, continuing this thread so long, but the first, the big behemoth in Fallout 3, the first one, is actually really easy to beat, and they give you all the tools to do it, but it still feels, you know, really scary the first time around.
Yeah, well, it helps almost, like, build in this idea, and I'll let it go after this, but it builds in this idea of, like, they give you all these weapons, and then they give you this giant beast that's really hard, but you're able to take him down, but it's because you have all those weapons, and now you have that knowledge in your head that if you face this guy again, you better have that stuff, or else you're gonna get, like, wrecked. And so it almost, like, he's like, here's this really strong guy, and even though you were able to destroy him, they handed you him, like, on a platter. And so now you have to, like, you know, what's gonna happen when you see three of them in a row and you're low on ammo?
This got very abstract. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. That's the kind of fun conversations we like to have.
Yeah, that really feels like a design level conversation.
Who knows? Maybe we could reach out to someone who worked on the game and see if they have thoughts that they want to share on it. Because, you know, my background is in usability that I don't get to actually use. And that would be a fascinating conversation to have.
And my background is on good writing, which means I'd have to be more critical.
It is what it is. Gaming cannot improve without critique, as we all know and hopefully agree on. While it has been a great conversation, we all do have, like, you know, things to get up and go do tomorrow, or in some cases go eat dinner because there's a 2-hour time difference. So I just wanted to kind of wrap up with where people can find you both online, Matt and Tony, where folks can find us, and say goodnight. So Matt and Tony, where are you on social media type things?
Well, I am at Matt Conn, MATTCONN, on the Twitters, if you want to see my Twitter. And then you can also, I generally do a lot of the tweeting from the at WeAreMidBoss and at ROM2064. So if you want to know more about what we're doing with ROM and MidBoss, at WeAreMidBoss and at ROM2064, and I'm at Matt Conn.
Yay, Tony.
So I'm at Tony Rocca, and that's TONITONIROCCA. And you definitely should not follow me because I just talk about really silly stuff all day, basically, and it's just garbage. It's just all garbage.
We're just gonna go all follow you, Tony.
But you can follow a more serious account, which is the @GamerX account. That's GAYMERX. And then, of course, go to GamerX.com to find more information about GamerX. You really, really, really should get your tickets now if you haven't gotten the ticket for GamerX, because I think they're going to be going up in price pretty soon, actually. And then also, they might be selling out pretty soon, too. Also, if you haven't gotten your hotel for the place, definitely get it now, because I don't know how much, like, we've been having to, like, go to, like, other hotels and, like, getting room blocks at, like, overflow hotels just because, like, so many people are coming this year. So definitely try to get your tickets to GamerX now. Try to get your hotel rooms now. So that's my warning, so that way when we run out of tickets and hotel rooms, that people don't yell at me. They're still gonna yell at me, but
we'll make sure no one yells at you for for something that could have been avoided. And we'll tweet that out once we're done recording, because by the time this actually airs, I think the prices will have gone up. So we'll include a link to buying tickets if tickets are still available. And I know that hotels are already scarce because I have to go crash with another friend on the 10th when I get into town.
Ooh, sorry.
Because I could not get a hotel room for the 10th by the time I booked two months ago.
Yeah, the hotel, like the main hotel's already sold out, and we're already running out of space in the other hotel. Yeah. It's going to be a good year, though.
It's going to be awesome.
Oh, it's going to be so fun.
So, David, where can folks find you online?
Right. I am at Red Conversation on Twitter. I am at davidlreeves.com, which is a website where you can contact me if you require my services as a generally fiction editor. And I am apparently doing a podcast with Kiva Bey, Virender Jubal, and Dave Rensing about cartoons, which would be at Gosh Cartoons, if I remember correctly.
Cool. Well, that'll be a fun podcast to listen to and reminisce about cartoons.
Yeah, well, we're talking about the last unicorn first, which is either right around or some slightly at before the time that this podcast goes out.
Whoa, last unicorn. That's a heavy subject to start
with. It'll probably be your first episode will be out before this airs. But we'll include a link to the show notes. And last, and today feeling like least because I'm wiped out. No, it's fine. It's been a very long day because working at home is not as relaxing as a lot of people would think. I am Tanya, also known as Cipher of Tear, everywhere, including Hitbox, where I signed up and forgot I signed up, so now there are two of me on Hitbox. But that is CYPHEROFTYR, and the Patreon is I Need Diverse Games. And I will repeat that because I tried to stop a yawn in the middle of speaking. And the Patreon for the show and for the work I Need Diverse Games does is patreon.com/I Need Diverse Games, which is always in the show notes. And is part of what helps keep us on the air by paying for the Simplecast. And that is a wrap on an amazing episode and such wonderful discussion. Thank you so much, Matt and Tony.
Sorry for all the editing you're going to wind up having.
Sorry.
Yes. It was brilliant talking to you.
It's going to be a lot of editing, I'm sure. Thank you for having us.
Not that much.
How long do you usually try to make the show?
An hour. It's cool though. I'm a firm believer in if the conversation's going well, you know, not stopping it for the sake of we said an hour.
Oh yeah,
sometimes
that's
not what happens.
Yeah, no, and that's how you get the best material anyway.
Yeah, and with that, we will actually say good night.
All right.
Yay! Good night, everybody. Yay.
Thank you, everyone.
Don't fuck with me. I am the bitch. Burn an inch of the wood. Just